with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Oh, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 4, season 12. Who'd have thought it? I always start that way. I know I do. Anyway, listen. Obviously, you're listening. We've got a busy old show. The reason we've got a busy old show, because I'm going to say, on my right, we've got Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello. How are you?
Thanks for asking, Ryan Champion. That's really good of you, because nobody else ever does. In the middle, I've got Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
Don't even ask how I am. And on my left, I have Trevor Agnew. Hello, Trevor Agnew.
I mean, Champion, I also ask how you are.
I know you do, mate.
I'm going to ask now, because she's sent me.
Okay, no, that's fine. Like, Trevor Agnew, of course, who's our floater, as we call him. We did the excellent coaching piece. But Trev kind of dips in and out. Now, I'll be honest with you, folks. The reason why Trevor Agnew's here is because, in my head, Trevor Agnew had done Rally Portugal.
No!
Turns out, 10 minutes before we started recording this podcast, I thought, I'm going to have a look at EWRC.com and see how we got on at Rally Portugal. He hadn't actually done Rally Portugal. So, Trev, you can bugger off.
I worked there last year on WRC Live, though, so that, and I was there the year before spectating, so I have a little bit of knowledge about it. On that, I reckon I've got enough merit there to stay on, I think.
Oh, no, that's fair dues. I know, we'd never kick you off, but genuinely, my thought process when I started putting this programme together was, we'll get Trev on, he's done it. He hasn't.
First time I went to Rally Portugal was in 2001, and it absolutely bucketed it down. I'm sure Ryan will remember that, where people are falling off the road left, right and centre. It was torrential rain, people getting stuck on stages, horrendous. That was the first time I went.
Looking at the schedule for this weekend, I don't think that's going to happen. Ryan Champion, have you been over to sunny Portugal?
I've been on a couple of occasions, yes. Albeit not since it moved back up the country. The last time I was there was in the Algarve, about 3 years ago, I think.
There you go. And Jack Bennion, I'm going to ask you because I'm polite.
I've not been, but I remember 2001 that Trevor's talking about, I think, because that was the year Mackinnon won by not very much over Sainz, I think, wasn't it?
He did, yeah.
Shall we do some Rally Portugal trivia? Would you like that, boys?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, right. It's coming. And I'll be honest with you, I wish I could take credit for this, but we all know where it comes from now. It's
Gary
our
Boyd.
Roving reporter. Gary Boyd. Of course it's Gary Boyd. Right, boys. Are you ready for this? Strap yourselves in. Rally trivia. Now, do you know what? Do you know there's names that I normally get wrong? I don't know if you've noticed, boys. I get a few pronunciations wrong every now and again. But every now and again, there's a name. And it's not necessarily just rally drivers, but in this case, it is a rally driver. There's a name you like saying. I don't know if have you got a favourite name you like saying, Trev, of a rally driver of any period?
Yeah, Lappin.
Go on. There you go.
Kajetanovic.
No. Okay, Ryan Champion. No. Where's he from?
He's from up north. Really.
Korean.
Nout. Right, well, mine is Armando Arugio. Okay. There you go. That's one of my faves, just saying. But anyway, the rally trivia starts with Armando Arugio. Of Portugal returns to the WRC competition this weekend for the first time since Rally Finland 2012. During 2011 and 2012, Armando did 15 events in the Mini John Cooper Works WRC spec car. It was the most events of any driver in a Pro Drive built WRC spec Mini. At the same time, Danny Sordio, where did that come from?
That's a hard one to pronounce, isn't it?
Yeah. Danny Sordo, having only done 13 events in the Mini during 2011 and 2012. Would you like to know who done the most events in a Mini in WRC?
It could be our Brazilian friend. Maybe. Is it him?
In
the little pig, he called it, or some little green pig or something.
Possibly Jack Bennion.
I think it's the Ukrainian guy. I've forgotten his name.
Oh, yeah. That's who it is.
this is called teamwork.
His name's completely slipped my mind. Hang on. It'll come to me in a minute. Ask Ryan Champion.
Protasov? No.
No, it's not. It's not Protasov. No.
The other one.
Come on, Ryan, are you going to put them out of the misery?
No, I'm not clear. I remember it's a very colourful car.
Okay, well, there you go. It's Valerie. Valerie Gorbon.
That's it.
No,
it is. If Gary Boyd says it is Jack Bennion, it's fact. It's in concrete.
Yes, it is right, but you bounced it wrong.
Oh, if anybody, how many starts? 16 starts in 2016, 2017. He also started 20 WRC2 events during 2013 to 2015 in the reduced spec Mini. There you go.
That was RRC spec.
Yeah, thanks for that.
You know what he drove before that?
What did he drive before that, Jack Benyon?
Evo.
Thanks. Doesn't everybody drive an Evo now? At some point. Isn't it one of those cars?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. Trev, sorry, you were about to say something there before our excitable puppy Jack Benyon said something.
He didn't speak any English, or he didn't like to speak English, so as well as his co-driver, so that meant you were always on the wrong side of the road when he arrived. You had to cross over to get the interview at the stage end with WRC Live, and I've forgotten his co-driver's name at the bottom.
Sergi Lawrence.
No, wasn't Sergi.
I love that. Jack was so confident then.
Definitely not.
Sit down, Jack Benyon. Sit down.
Well, I know that Sergi Lawrence is his current co-driver, so maybe it's his previous co-driver.
Ryan Champion, can you bring some order to this, by the way? I don't know whether you noticed we've gone off all very excitable. You've remained calmed, cool and calculated. Are you all right, Ryan Champion, there?
I'm very well. I just remember Armindo Arroyo when he went off on a road section on Rally GB one year, retired from the rally because he went off on a road section. So there you go.
Okay. Do we know what happened?
Yeah. Well, it was that year, 2008, when the snow all froze and everybody had to run a hard compound Pirelli tire, and he just went off on the recce as well. And I remember seeing Arroyo down a hillside on a road.
That was the year you did it. Oh, that had. I just remember.
That's on the newspaper. Yes.
Ooh, the Sun newspaper. But remember it well. I remember it well. Steve, I was there. I was waving me the flag for Ryan.
Are available and other newspapers should be bought.
Yeah, you go. Well said. Anyway, listen, you know what? Talking about going off on recce's and stuff. Not that I want people to go off on recce's. Everybody's got a little bit excited, boys. I don't know if you've seen that. It looks like every now seems to have focus in M Sport. And I did see somebody focus RS, of course. And I did actually somebody tweet. Somebody said using his road car to the recce on this one. There you go. I think
it's a bit sad because that means the Volvos are slowly going. I think that's
I agree.
I can tell you here and now, you can still rent one to do a recce in. I can tell you that quite categorically.
I think me and you should buy one, Tony Simpson. Let's buy one.
Why me? Well, how have I got involved?
I don't know. We'll buy one. We'll buy one just to make some noise with.
Just for shits and giggles.
Yes.
Can I ask Gary Boyd for some trivia?
Gary Boyd will be listening. Gary, ping your ears back. Jack Benyon's got a question.
I'm fairly sure that either one of those or those recce cars combined have done enough miles to go to the moon and back. Oh, that's a stat. That's a stat I read not so long ago, and I'd like Gary Boyd to confirm that for us.
I thought that was going to be yours. Now let's ask the question of Trevor Agnew. Trevor Agnew, did you have a Volvo recce car, you and Mark Higgins?
Never had a Volvo recce car, but had a Toyota Celica recce car, which is even better, I think.
Okay. See, you know what? I love a recce car, and the reason why I love a recce car is because most of them, I had a recce car 15, 16, 17 years ago. Got it. It was a Golf GTI, and it turned out that everybody who I speak to about this Golf GTI actually also owned it at some point. Julian Reynolds, Jones had it. I think Dan Dunbabin had it. Who else had it? There was about four of the rally people who I didn't even know. Recce cars seems to have a bit of a reputation. They're a bit slack, I think is the best way of putting it. They're a bit loose. If they were a lady, they'd be a 10 to 2. Right. Ryan Champion, what did you use as a recce car?
At which point?
I suppose
everything from an ex-pro drive legacy estate chase car. I had a legacy RS for a while, which was an unusual thing. Several left-hand drive 205s. One of them which did exactly what you just said. I think it was used by like Patrick Snyers, it was used by Niall McShay, it was used by Derek McGarrity. I used it, and somebody else ended up with it back, and same thing. They all went through Mr. Davy Patterson in Northern Ireland about 17 times.
Yeah. Trev?
Here's one for you. You like this one. Rally Germany in 2001, round of the European Championship. Neil Wearden, it was a pre-war for 2002, and it became a World Championship event. So we went and did the recce in Neil Wearden's Audi 80 turbo diesel. not only did we do the recce, but we also had John Stevens across to the Nürburgring to give us some tarmac tuition, which was absolutely brilliant, in the Audi 80 turbo diesel. And some of the best learning that Neil had was around the Nürburgring with John Stevens in his Audi 80 turbo diesel. And I think on Molly as well, with Granum, with Delacour, with the Galsby, they're all there.
Right, before we go any further, Jack Ben, we've got to ask you, what's your favourite wrecking car,
my
Jack?
My current favourite car is Marty McCormack, which you know all about.
I do. Marty McCormack has got one of the X-Pro Drive Mini Countryman wrecking cars. He bought one, and he rescued me. The last time I did GB, I don't know that. Am I allowed to say this out loud, how many recce cars we ended up using? I think we ended up using 3 recce cars anyway. And Marty ended up coming in and rescuing me and towing me through 2 stages. And I'm pretty certain I went faster on a tow rope through those stages than I went in a rally car. Marty doesn't hang about on recces, I think it's fair to say. But yeah, that is possibly the coolest recce car. It's a proper thing as well.
There is probably more stories from recces than there is from the rally. It's just as we found last week with Gus Greensmith, we can't share most of them.
Yeah, even I was hesitant there. But
we talk about our F2 special recce stories from the Isle of Man in the 1990s, mid 90s. We definitely could run a series of podcasts on that, but we wouldn't be able to be done.
To sound probably end up in anyway, listen, boys, but believe it or not, right, I know we're doing rally stuff technically, but it is obviously really Portugal this coming weekend. I want to come to that in a second. Jack, I wanted to bring Jack in first. Obviously, we always make reference to your paper, Jack. Extra lobe outings seem unlikely or are unlikely in WRC, Jack.
Yeah, it doesn't look like we're going to see him in Germany because he's on holiday. And also, it doesn't look like that Citroën want him to do a part-time schedule next year. They want him back in full or not at all. So it looks like we're not going to see Sebastian at too many events next year, if any. So my good mood to start this podcast has been destroyed instantly by you.
I'm sorry, mate. I'm sorry. Ryan, I'm going to come to you first on this one. Obviously, it's from Jack's paper, but are we surprised by this? You know, Loeb left the WRC for a reason, and he seems to pick and choose what he wants to do. Obviously, you know, Citroën, I suppose, is trying to push him into a corner after the fantastic stuff that he's done, and obviously the bounce effect it's had on the team. But are we surprised?
No, not at all. As you said, he left the WRC for a reason. He wanted more of his own time. He chose to do something different. Obviously, he went to World Touring Car to begin with, and now he's found himself in World Rallycross. You know, there's no two ways about it. To go and do the full WRC is a massive undertaking of personal time. And he made the choice, you know, a good number of years ago now, to step back from that time commitment and, you know, to go back to that, a huge undertaking and a huge change in his lifestyle again. And it's easy comparatively to from a, like I said, time point of view. No, it doesn't surprise me in the slightest that, you know, we're probably not going to see him for.
Trev, it was the fairy tale, I suppose, that we all wanted in some ways. I think even fans that perhaps got a little bit tired of Loeb's success back in the day, to see him back and to see him do what he's done and what, you know, he did, you know, early in this season. I think we all, well, Jack Benyon, I think, took the giddiness scale beyond the beyond 11, you know, let alone the setting of 10. He went beyond 11 with it. But is it right that we need to be looking forward now anyway, as opposed to looking back?
Yeah, I think it was interesting to come out in Mexico just to show again how consistent he had been over the years. That played out again in Mexico. The puncture was a thing that he shouldn't have stopped and changed. If he hadn't done that, then it might have been a good race to the end. But as Ryan says, he was never ever going to come back. And just put yourself in his shoes. He's done it 9 years. He's won it. Go out and have a bit of fun. May as well drive one of these fantastic cars if you get the opportunity to do it on 3 events where it fits around you. But let's just go out at the weekend and win the rallycross to just show people, you know, do that as well.
Absolutely. I guess that, Jack, is obviously there's a side with regard Chris Meeks talking about the bounce effect that it had on the team and things like that. But I suppose now looking at Citroën moving forward, and I know Ryan, I spoke about this last week. It was a bit too soon to start speculating, but obviously we've got Chris there, we've got Craig there, and obviously Mads is doing this limited program as well. Do we see massive changes with regard to the driver lineup? Do you think Chris will be there next year? I think that's the big question, isn't it? I think that's going to be the domino effect.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? I think whatever happens, if they want to realistically fight for the Constructors' Championship, they're going to have to run three cars full-time next year, aren't they? You know, that's no other way to look at it. If Citroën are interested in competing with the likes of Hyundai, M Sport and Toyota, they need to have another car there. So for me, I think it's very likely we'll see Chris and Craig in the car next year. If they have a third car, that's going to be the interesting one, isn't it, to work out who's going to take that up and whether it is Mads, because, you know, I don't think he'd be a bad third option for Citroën for scoring points. I think he'd be a fairly consistent driver who can score good points when the opportunity arises. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Citroën's lineup plays out. I think, you know, it's never too early to speculate about what's going to happen in the WRC, but it's also important to remember that things change so quickly that, you know, it's difficult to predict what's going to happen.
Trev, would it be, obviously, you know, Citroën have said that they want Loeb either full time or not at all. If it's not at all, obviously, we've just been talking about, you know, the possibilities of the drivers that are already there. Obviously, Lefebvre is also there, of course, who did have a top line seat but has been charged with giving, you know, the C3R5 run in the park this season. Does it have that kind of second choice, you know, feel about it if they do go down that, you know, is this fair to say at the moment there's, you know, Chris is obviously the number one driver, or when I say obviously the number one, the older driver, he's been around, I suppose he has got that superstar status to some degree, but, you know, Citroën have always had this kind of glamour about it, and it almost feels like there's a little bit of shine gone off the glamour for Citroën, and that shine definitely returned with Loeb.
Well, the attraction, the media side of things came with him, as I said before. It was just consistency in the speed that was there, which you don't get with a lot of the guys now. I'd like before, Portugal 13 is the fastest times. It just fails all the time, or there's issues with it. Nobody can put together a consistent run of times. On top of that, you've got Ogier, who's exceptional, no doubt about it, in the same way that Loeb was. And Citroën seemed to be behind everybody as regards the team, Jack said. You know, exactly the same thing. It's just really confusing sometimes as to what the goals are. They want to win rallies one time, like you're Samson, but unless you've got against the other teams have got three strong cars, that doesn't make any sense to me. Chris Meek will win new rallies. He's won five. There's nobody else who put in that seat that would be better than him as regards outright speed and winning rallies. Like everybody bar Ogier, they have to be consistent. If they're not consistent, they need to get their fingers out, because these excuses are coming. Didn't hit anything, got punctured, don't know what happened. Like Mosier is not doing that over the last 5-6 years.
It's a good point. I tell you what I find interesting, right, is that I think it was you and I that were speculating last week, I think it may have been, or may have been the week before, we were talking about budgets and things like that, and obviously, you know, is there a concern? I think I expressed the opinion as opposed to me putting words in your mouth of, you know, could Toyota run away with this just due to the fact that the power of the yen or the euro or indeed the pound, you know. But, you know, there's been some reports this week with regards to obviously Toyota not having a great first quarter, and obviously they're looking to make cuts. Could that be a level playing field for WRC moving forward?
Well, we'd have to see, but I mean, I think Toyota are very committed to WRC for now. I think the budget will be in place for the foreseeable future. I don't think next year will be in any doubt in terms of budget. It's the first Norgrad rally of the year, and I guess we'll see how it plays out. Are Toyota dominant on gravel? Let's see. I think it's going to be a big battle, because realistically, everybody is under pressure apart from Sebastian Ogier. Yet again, he's sitting pretty at the front of the championship, having done a good, consistent job. Just as Trevor said, you know, we hear the likes of Jari Matti Latvala, we hear the likes of Chris Meek saying outwardly, I'm going to take an Ogier type approach, I'm going to take points, I'm going to be consistent. But nobody does it on his level. And like I said, he's got everybody under pressure again. So it's going to be a big fight in Portugal. There's going to be a lot of people that need to make a big point there. And it'll be interesting to see if Toyota do carry on that form.
The The Absolute Rally Podcast. Made by us, supported by you. Help us make more episodes. Become a patron at patreon.com/absoluterally.
Jack, obviously we had a dominant Oitanak, who I think is the other at the moment that, you know, Raj just been mentioning there, the untouchables almost, or the untouchable, and everybody else is kind of touched at the moment. I think Tanak is very, very nearly on that level. But to be fair, we probably would have said that about Thierry Neuville maybe even 12 months ago. Is the worm turning almost? Have we got, is the next protagonist actually Oitanak and not particularly, you know, Thierry Neuville?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? It's got to take into account the circumstances that each driver is. Or, you know, Toyota have been very strong this year, and Oit's coming off the back of a very, very strong year with M Sport, and has clearly built on that this year and early added it. And I think what we're seeing with Oit being a more rounded driver, you know, that I think has almost always been there, or you know, maybe it's needed a little bit of refinement. You know, being a very quick driver, his problem always keeping his cool and delivering those results under pressure, and also making sure he didn't go off the road. And, you know, what we've seen with him is him become a much more rounded individual. With Thierry Neuville, I think maybe the thing to consider with him is, you know, how much has he actually improved over the past, you know, 2 or 3 years, and how much has he actually changed as a driver? And, you know, if he does want to challenge Sebastian Ogier in the future, he does need to become a more rounded driver, and does need to do a better job of scoring points in situations where, you know, he's not going to win, but, you know, he needs to take home the maximum available. And I think we have seen that improve for Thierry. I think we've seen results where he's finished third or fourth or fifth when, you know, maybe a couple of years ago he would have thrown it off trying to win the rally. So, you know, I think we are seeing signs of improvement from him as well. But, you know, the only way these guys can get better is by competing against people like Sebastian Ogier, and to have Sebastian Ogier there, you know, is obviously a terrible thing for the other manufacturers who have it, because he's going to be the favourite to win every rally that he starts. But at the same time, it's a great thing for those guys who are, you know, a little bit younger than him and are coming through, because they've got something to aim at and they know what is possible on a rally. You know, if Sebastian Ogier is setting a time, or he's setting a benchmark, they know that that's possible and that's what they've got to be aiming for. So you've got to hope that having Sebastian Ogier in the championship is a good thing in order to help those guys develop themselves.
Trevor, I watched the preview program last night for Portugal. I had a great piece with Oitanak on, and, you know, he openly said that he had a job to do. And, you know, he was a number two driver at M Sport, and if things might have been different on one or two events, he certainly would have been closer to Sebastian Ogier. Having been his teammate, Trevor, and now going into this Toyota team, which, you know, Yari Matti told him he was going to take him a year or two to bed in, hasn't quite happened that way. But certainly having worked with Sebastian Ogier last year, and now finding himself in a team which, you know, slowly but surely he's making himself the number one driver. Am I seeing it in a conference? Is it just me? I must admit, I found him very relaxed in the interview, and I found that he was very, very confident. He doesn't seem fazed by
him. Yeah, I think there was a change in Portugal last year. He was leading it after he left on like 6 seconds, and ran wide, kept the back wheel, and dropped it. And he learned on that. He didn't get upset in the way he handled stuff into the rest of the year. He would have done a lot of rallies last year. And it was interesting, I suppose, it's where Ogier found a sweet spot to back out to give him for it. So he was going around. But Oit was just that little bit. And part of what Seb Ogier wanted to show in Portugal, he is the fastest driver out there. The extra development he asked for from forward, and it has been for Oit. For me, this rally last year, he's seen that whole approach to it. And he got quicker and more consistent from then on in, I felt. And he's proved it this year. He is a very quick lad, no doubt about it. And confident.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I'm kind of hanging me on the fact that I think absolute worst case scenario for Oitanak, he is going to finish runners up in the driver's title this year.
Well, like I said, I think we'll know a little bit more after this weekend. But it does seem that they're getting that car better and better. And if it's as good as we think it is, then you'd have to say he's got a good chance of that. But ultimately, he wants to win the world championship, doesn't he? And I'm sure Toyota want to win a driver's title as well as a manufacturer. So, I think the pressure's on all of them to show Ogier that he can be beaten.
I think it'll come. I think it'll come. I don't see. I take a look around and I look at the drive. David Edwell piece of us this week. And to be fair, I was looking at the results from Rally Argentina over the weekend. And, you know, Danny Sordo, again, metaphorically speaking, gun to his head over his seat, and he's still pulling out results again. And we're all very, it's all very, very easy to write people off, like Danny says, or whatever it may be. But then he's there and he's consistent and he's scoring. Whereas I'm left hand scratching my head with Andreas, for instance. I just wonder what's kind of happening to Andreas. Is the car working? Get the car working? You know, I don't know.
I think it's fair to say that he outperformed Andreas this year and got all, you know, he took the driver's standings and Sebastian and Danny Sordo is behind Andreas Mikkelsen. That's with Danny not having done Sweden. He's had a little bit of trouble here and there as well. I think on pace, I think Danny Sordo has outperformed Andreas this year, and he's really going to have to step it up if he wants to keep his seat. You know, that Hyundai seat is a coveted seat. Hyundai know that they've got a strong package and that they're going to want to drive that package with. You know, they have a lot of drivers knocking on their door wanting that seat. So if Andreas wants to keep it, you know, he really is going to have a good, strong second half of the year to keep hold of it. And if not, he's going to find himself in rotation because, you know, I don't think any of us expected Danny and Hayden to be sharing a seat this year until that news sort of came out towards the end of the year. They've both got strong credentials. Patton has won in Argentina and delivered some really strong performances in the past few years. Danny is a regular point scorer who is good on both surfaces, contrary to people calling him a, you know, an asphalt driver. He is very good on both surfaces equally, I think. And he's the kind of person who will guarantee you a fourth or a fifth place when other people would, you know, have accidents and have trouble. So yeah, Andreas is really going to have to pull it out of the bag for the second half of the year, for sure.
Right, I know it seems like a very obvious question. I'm going to ask Trev the same question in a second. Is there sometimes a situation where drivers and teams or drivers and cars just don't work?
Yes, yeah, of course there is. And we've touched on this in the past. These particular breed of world rally cars seem quite difficult from that point of view. You know, we've seen a lot of drivers struggle for setups from rally to rally. They'll be very fast on one rally, then they'll struggle on the next. And Ogier obviously suffered as well last year. We talked a lot last year about Tanak actually had great consistency over most of the rallies last year, yet it was Ogier that obviously took the championship. But we're seeing this new breed of world rally car seeming to be particularly difficult to set up for certain drivers. So yeah, absolutely. And not only that, yes, the car's development is always driven by the lead driver, by probably the most successful driver in the team. And that can sometimes make it difficult for other drivers to come in. The most powerful example of that was back in the Mitsubishi days when you had a car that Tommy Mäkinen could drive incredibly fast and pretty much win as he chose without doing much testing at all. He used to let Lasse Lampi do the testing. Tommy would turn up and do the rally, blitz everybody, and yet nobody else could jump into that car. Freddie Loic struggled with it. There was the odd exception, like Marcus Grönholm got in it and went very well, but that was an example of Mäkinen taking the development down his own path. Now that doesn't happen so much anymore, and data is very transparent, but like I said, the development will always be driven around the most successful driver in the team, and that can make it difficult for somebody who's struggling.
Trev, when, as Rice just mentioned there, somebody is struggling, is this a case sometimes that there is literally too many changes made?
Yeah, there's a point there, definitely. And there was a lot of this last year when they were talking about the centre differential. And I had a conversation, I think you're actually with us, at the Autosport show when David Lapworth pitched up.
Yeah.
I could ask him, David, about the centre diff and how people, and he said, I don't understand it. You know, this is a guy who probably the most technical experienced guys that you're going to get in World Rally. And he said, just go back to Colin McRae. He used to run the car with a spool diff, in other words, a locked diff in the back, and he locked up the centre diff and drove it just on the front. He said, you know, and this all this talk about car not turning in properly and getting understeer here and there, there's a lot of it is overcomplicated. And I said, I remember doing tests with Vauxhall 4 or 5 days and on gravels, you go up the road, and every time you go up the road, the surface changes, and we're doing little tweaks here and little tweaks there. And then you leave the test after 4 or 5 days and you think that you're going to go quarter of a second per K quicker. And you get to the rally and it's not much. And the thing for me as well is when you set the car down at the end of the rally, which Ryan will tell you about, it's all over the place, the geometry. And you learn to, you know, you just adjust your driving as you go through the rally. So I'm not convinced that all the testing is required. There's a feel thing that you need. Once you get a car that's balanced and there's no vices with it, In fact, with Martin Rowe, and, you know, a lot of what we did was just do a shakedown, even just do a couple of runs. If the car felt good, then that's it. You've got the confidence, off you go. But yeah, you're right. There's a lot of adjustments that can confuse people sometimes, I feel.
You nearly mentioned, yeah, go on, right.
Just to add to that, how many times do we hear it? You know, they do all the testing in the world, and you get to the end of the first stage, setup's not right. Well, what was the point in all that testing then?
The feeling. Yeah. It's the feeling, Ryan Champion. You like the feeling, don't you, so to speak? right, boys, I'm gonna put you squarely on the spot, and we're going to do predictions because that's what we do for the laugh. Ryan Champion, Rally Portugal, who's your winner?
Oh, it's hard to look past Oik Tanak, isn't it? As much as we've just talked about it. Yeah, going to go Tanak.
Trevor Agnew?
Ogier.
And Jack Bengen? Jack Bengen?
Oik Tanak.
And I'll tell you what, I'm going to go Hayden Paddon.
Wow.
But it was almost as if, like, you didn't know that question was coming to yourself.
I'll be honest with you, I've been trying to find a way. I wanted to talk about Hayden, and I wanted to get your take on this guy. So obviously, we know Hayden's been busy. He's been doing stuff with his own car. Over in New Zealand, he's done a couple of national events, dominating them and things like that. And he did an APRC round, which is an amalgamation of New Zealand events and an APRC round. Does he come back, Ryan Champion, match fit? Is he still match fit? He's done a 2-day test in the current spec World Rally car, but how far behind the black ball could he be by doing national events in an AP4 car as opposed to missing one WRC round?
Well, he's match fit. Whether that's enough to be bang on the pace at this level, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, he's done the mileage. He is match fit. He's been in the car. He's been testing it. But it'll just come back to exactly what we've just been talking about. How does the car feel for him on the first stage? Does it give him the confidence to push? And if it does, he'll be very close. And if he's not confident with it at that point, then he'll struggle through the first day. So the first day will tell
you. Do you know
the
what? We should have a whole section about kind of mind coaching and stuff like. Oh yes, we have. We've done one, haven't we, Trev? Trev, is this more psychological than mechanical?
I think if he gets in the car, he's got a good feeling, he'll go quick. I'd love you to be right that Hayden Paddon will win the rally, but a more realistic expectation is probably getting on the podium and at some point and do the job at Danny Sordo's, so he can get back into it and get back up to speed again.
I'm just thinking running as well, to be honest with you. Road position, that type of thing.
Yeah. You're right on that one. There's no doubt he has a chance. He knows his stages real well. I think he won 2011. He won Super 2000 in Portugal as well. I think he's been leading it in the past. He's certainly set in top times. And he loves the rally. So he's got everything ready to go. If he gets in the car and it feels good at the end of that first stage, then he's definitely in with a shot. But as I said, there's, you could pick all 13 that are on that list, maybe not sooner than. And all of them could be in the shadow winning stages. They all probably will win stages or get very close to the front of it. But you've got to put together consistent times, bang, 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 and have cars reliable. That's where M Sport wins every time. They've got a reliable car, haven't they?
Absolutely. See, it's very quickly, but your favourite driver's name to say, confirmed off the WRC2 programme as well.
Sorry, Tony, the signal's just broken up a little bit there. Can you say that question again, please?
Your favourite rally driver's name to say confirmed now for WRC2? Kaito Kaitovich. Jack's gone.
He's out of here.
He's gone. I feel like I've sprung something on him and that's completely blew his mind.
It's just come back on. Sorry, it's dropping out. I don't know what's going on.
I was just pointing out, Jack, your favourite rally driver's name to say. Are you with me so far?
Favourite rally driver's name to say.
That one that you said before, right? He's just been confirmed for WRC2 switch.
Okay. Can you drop me and come back?
No.
Okay. Well, you might have to carry on without me then, because it's just breaking up. I can't really hear what's going on.
We can hear you fine. I tell you what, right? We're at the point now.
That doesn't really work for a rally podcast. If you can hear me, I can't hear you because I don't know what questions are.
Could be the Jack Benyon podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack Benyon, give you your any other business for this week?
Can I give you my any other business? I was going to talk about
Marion Evans, Cameron Davis, and Rhys Yates all being British drivers going to do foreign events.
Yes, please tell us all about it.
So Cameron is going to do Rally Portugal, and he's doing the Iberica Cup, which has a lot of prize money on offer, which is pretty cool. 208 R2s, all on Michelin tyre, and they're running as part of the kind of national event on Rally Portugal. And then we've got Rhys Yates, who recently finished second on the Pirelli International Rally for the BRC, and he's going to do Rally Antibes, which does some pretty fantastic Monte Carlo stages like the Col de Torino, and he's going to take his Skoda Fabia R5 out there to fight with some of the French tarmac championship guys, some of them including Johan Bonato, who's taking the C3 R5 there for a bit of tarmac running, and Brian Bouffier is driving Hyundai i20 R5 on that event, which is also quite significant because he's driven pretty much most of the current R5s now as well. And then Marion Evans is joining Rhys Yates on the Antibes Rally to do the 208 Rally Cup, which is the French-based 208 Rally Cup that some of the people like Chris Ingram and Gary Pearson have done in the past. So good luck to those three.
There you go. I'm quickly going to do a couple of any other businesses. Right, Chris Ingram, get well soon. I know you've been putting out some bits and pieces. He was on Northwest BBC News last night here in the northwest of England. I don't know whether it went around nationally, but it was a great piece. But I have to say, he's absolutely appalling at cleaning cars while being filmed, because for some reason they said, clean your car, Chris. And I texted him straight afterwards and said, there's no way in the world, Chris, you clean your car, judging by what's just been filmed. So there you go. But yeah, get well soon, Chris. Well done. Well done to everybody who survived the Mang last weekend. I know I was a week early, but I was really envious watching all of, talking about recce pictures coming in. Mang's National Rally last weekend. And yeah. Jason Pritchard won it in one of the older Focuses, still going very, very well. But there was a whole host of modern machinery that went over there. And everybody seems to have issues. It was an absolute washout. And if you survived it, well done you for listening to this podcast. And get well soon as well, Jack Leese and Michael Gilby, who had a horrendous off on the Plains National Rally last weekend in the UK. And I actually seen the picture of the car last night, and it was a stomach turn on. So guys, get well soon anyway. So that's my only businesses for this week. Oh, one last thing, guys, on the Olympus Rally, the next round of ARA, that's this weekend as well. We're going to have somebody on from ARA next week who's going to be telling us all about the championship this year. Of course, we've got Chris Atkinson over there now, who's challenging David Higgins. So we're going to get someone from ARA to tell us what's going on and how that championship's moving forward, and some of the junior sections and things like that. So there you go.
You're listening to the Absolute Rally Podcast, bringing you the biggest guests, the latest news, and in-depth analysis of all the goings-on from across the world of rally. Help us make more episodes. Become a patron at patreon.com/absoluterally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. I mentioned him last week. We were going to have him on last week. I sent him away with a task, because he'd had a pretty good start to the year, and there was a national event in the BTRDA over here in the UK at the weekend. They said, do us a favour, Matt, we've recorded it, but it doesn't sound great. Go and win it the weekend, and then we can talk about winning at the weekend as well. And sure enough, Matt Edwards didn't let me down. Welcome back to Matt Edwards to Absolute Rally. How are we doing, mate?
Yeah, good. Yeah, we'll try again, shall we?
I know. It happens. Smoke and mirrors, you know. I made reference to you all the way through the podcast. That's what's quite funny. But you didn't even end up in it. So there you go. So Matt's here now anyway. Right. I'm trying to remember, and I'm sure you haven't lost count. Is this four on the bounce or three on the bounce?
Three.
Definitely. Sorry, mate. Definitely three. So two national events and the BRC opening round wins. Right. As starts the seasons go, Matt, have you had a better one?
No. Next question.
I thought I'd give you an easy one, mate, to start with. Second question, are you finding enough time to wash the champagne out of the race overalls in between events?
Okay, just don't, about. Next
don't tell
question.
Me you've got. Don't tell me you've got two pairs. Please don't tell me you've got
I've
two.
Got, yeah, I have got two. I have. Yeah.
That's confidence. Well,
the one car is in a Swift Group Limited livery.
Yeah.
The other car is in a Swift Go livery, so we're fortunate enough to have overalls to match the livery and the graphics on each car. So it's a rare problem for me to have had over the years to have two different cars and two different liveries, but it's a fantastic opportunity, obviously, to do two championships, two different cars, well, effectively the same car, but it's definitely the best seat in the house in British rallying this year, and I'm just trying to make the most of it, really.
No, good on you. Listen, let's go back to the beginning. Obviously, the opening round of the BRC this year was the Pirelli. There was a lot of running riders out, and, you know, we had David Bogie, former BRC champion in the Skoda, which, you know, a lot of people are, you know, a lot of Skodas are out there. Many feel that the strengths and the weaknesses between the Fiesta and the Skoda. David's drove both. He stayed in the Skoda camp. You've got, you know, a four times British champion coming back in Keith Cronin, coming back with the high-end eye, which is, I think it's fair to say, is a little bit unproven at the moment, but Keith certainly isn't. Rhys Yates, Michelin shod Skoda R5. And then you've got Matt. Now, going into that and you start looking at that, do you focus on where your rivals are going to come from, or do you just go out and do what Matt does? And the reason why I asked that, because at the end of the TV coverage, which I thought was fantastic, you seemed very relaxed and you said you were very relaxed in the car. Did that stem from the fact that you didn't get sucked into worrying about the others?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we did last year was just worry about me getting the time in the car, getting the mileage in, getting the experience, and I wasn't in a position to change what I was doing. So my pace was my pace. It got better as the year went on, and it just gave me a sort of like a comfort zone that you know I could operate in consistently and, you know, and sustain over. Like for the Manx, it was the same pace, more or less from start to finish, and you know I could sustain that for a long period of time. So we just went in did the Pirelli with a load more seat time, some, you know, real good testing, obviously with all the help of M Sport this year and Pirelli. We've got a huge amount of knowledge base to tap into, and the natural sort of level of pace has come up without really putting a lot more not commitment in time, but commitment in the car, and not taking any more risks. The natural fluency, I guess, has come on. So I'm just concentrating on what I'm doing, and it seems that when I do what I do reasonably well, the time is there, if that makes sense. So it's just trusting that the natural inputs that I make to the car are doing the job, and letting the times come from that rather than trying to react or respond to what anybody else is doing.
How hard has it been for you? You know, you know, everybody who knows you're possibly one of the hardest working drivers, I think, in the UK towards, you know, getting budget and keeping yourself out there and keeping yourself relevant and stuff like that. But you've always rang your own cars. Yeah. You've always had people helping you. All of a sudden, you know, we mentioned this like the last time we spoke, which obviously didn't go out, but, you know, you said it yourself, you've got the best team in the world. How hard is it to kind of hand over the responsibility almost of the car to somebody else, and they're telling you, this is it. This we're in the optimum setup. This is everything for you. Obviously, I know you tweak it. Of course, you do. Every driver tweaks it. But did that come easy, or is that still something you're kind of struggling with a little bit at the moment? Because you're obviously only one event in.
Yeah. Well, I got a flavour for that last year with the Swift rally team running the car. The guys there did effectively everything, and it was difficult. And because it sounds a bit daft, but when you're working on the car, you're like, you're washing it, you're really prepping it, you're taking bits off it, you're in and around it a lot between events, and you kind of build a bit of a bond with the car. You get an understanding, you get a relationship with it in a way, just by being around it all the time, and you get comfortable with do, and you know, and it's little quirks and things like that. But when the last time you saw the rally, it was going onto the trailer covered in mud and a couple of little broken bits here and there, and then the next time you see it, it's you know, it's after your recce, it's brand new, it's on stands, it looks great, all the stickers are perfect, and you don't actually get that time in between to build that comfort with it. And it always felt like getting into a bit of a spaceship every time last year. It didn't feel like mine. It felt like a bit of a dream, I guess you could say, coming from, you know, the basic cars that I've driven early on and then building my own cars. And it just felt a bit, all a bit intimidating, if you like, because it's still, to me, you know, a huge step in what the cars are capable of and things like that. And it's taken a while to get into that comfort zone. But now that is, you've got that bit out of the way last year, I'm quite okay. It's very easy to say getting used to it, because it's a very nice place to be with all that support. But it allows me to put my time and energy into preparing myself and looking at DVDs and doing my homework, as I call it. I put more time into other areas that are equally as important as preparing the car, because you need all those items together to get the result. And I've said quite a lot that, yeah, I believe when you get to the start line of the first stage, 85-90% of your result is determined, and all your prep is what is determined that result. You're not going to drive any better on the Saturday than you were the day before. Your notes aren't going to be any better, and the car isn't going to be any better. It is what it is. So you've just got to go out, put all that into practice, and it's the lady luck and other people that are going to have that little 10% sway on where your final result is. So you just got to get on with it at that point.
Did the Pirelli result kind of confirm I should be here? This is where I should be.
Yeah, it's funny, because there was always the chance that I was going to be the weak link, I guess, in the thing. We had the best car, or the best prepared car with M Sport. We've got a great tyre. You know, we've got great support in Morris Lubricants, Nicky Griss Motorsport, and P1 are helping us. There's loads of people involved that are obviously well proven, you know, products and people that are proven packages. And I probably was the only one in that whole system that potentially wasn't proven at that level. So that was a big thing for me. When I was first doing anything remotely related to BRC, Keith Cronin was winning his first one. So he's been at that level for a long time. So mentally, I don't quite put myself on that level performance-wise, because I've just been climbing up and up and up over that time. So, yeah, it has been difficult to kind of accept or believe that I could be at that level. But I guess there comes a time that you've got to just have some belief, I guess. You know, I've never doubted my ability, but actually proving it, and when you get the chance, is another thing altogether.
I guess the everything you've just described there as well, and you know, you called it the best seat in the house, which is a great way of describing the opportunity you've got this year. But that also, you know, having kind of dragged everybody kicking and screaming, and you know, I know what it's like, family, friends, partners, and everything else into, you know, helping you do what you want to do, and you know, all of a sudden you've now got the best seat in the house, you've now got the best team, you've got a great tyre, you know, your co-driver, everything else is there. There's now a weight of expectancy as well, and I guess that's the next thing that you've got to manage.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the good thing about having such a long build-up, you know, 14 years of rallying now to get this far, every little step has happened slowly. So it's not been like a jump from a, you know, we obviously started in the Astra, and my next car wasn't an R2 Fiesta, and then I didn't jump into an R5. So the transition period has been very slow and gradual. I think it's just that's helped me to not have a big change in comfort zone from one year to the next. So it's been, you know, not easy to adapt, but there hasn't been a big shock in terms of what's happened from one year to the next. And I think that's just means that my expectations have only gone up very slowly each year. So again, my expectation from last year to this year is just more podiums, a gravel win, which we didn't get last year, and just it becomes more comfortable to be at that level and what the expectations are, because the expectations are obvious. It's not like there's any ambiguity that we're supposed to be in the top five or six. We want to be and are expected to be in the top three all the time, and that doesn't seem out of reach. So the targets have always been realistic and achievable, and that's how I've always kept it. You know, I'm not saying I'm going to go on and win World Rally Championship in 3 years, because it's not a realistic goal, but it doesn't say my ambition doesn't want to take me there. It's the building blocks to get there that are the difficult bits. But, you know, there is ambition to carry on and keep going, and but that isn't necessarily supported by all the resources that you need to do it yet. So, you know, we've just got to keep realistic and keep the targets achievable, and that means that, you know, you've got a chance of being satisfied with what you've done at the end of the year.
Sounds like you've been working with R. Trevor Agnew, to be honest with you. I know you haven't, but we've just done a whole section on the podcast about this and building blocks and everything else. Honestly, we did a 7-part feature with Trevor Agnew on his coaching, and that's all kind of part of it. So yeah, it's quite ironic, really, that it's came up here. But now you're doing the national events, as you said. You've got two cars, two sets of overalls. Sorry, I can't help but laugh when I say that. Two cars, two sets of overalls. And you're doing the national championship over here, BTRDA. Obviously, short, sharp shock events, 45 miles, organizers' notes. I know you've done these events, you know, year on year, but, you know, they do change. You're in a different car, that, you know. And again, we're back to this thing of using organizers' notes. How are you finding that transition from writing a set of notes when you go out on the recce on the Pirelli to then coming back and taking a set of Paston's notes, which, you know, Gemba system, it works to a point and everything else. How are you finding that transition, switching between organizers and your own notes?
Yeah, it is difficult. I mean, I'm quite familiar with most of the stages that those events use, which is a big, big bonus. So there's an element of familiarity that comes across into the, not necessarily into the notes, but in my mind, the notes are a trigger to that bit of memory, I guess. So they all paint a similar picture, but it is a bit different. It's a bit more difficult. There's another challenge there. Obviously, I haven't got the familiarity of a previous day recce, but you've still got to, you know, I try and make the amendments to them to just help ease the transition from my own completely, you know, completely written set of notes to the Paterson's interpretation. And yeah, to be fair, it works. The system works. It saves a lot of people a lot of time and effort, you know, having the notes provided and the DVD. And, you know, I spend a lot of time on the DVD. From the minute I get it, it's available to me pretty much wherever I am in the country. And I just use the time to familiarise myself. And the beauty of the repeat stage system with the loop of 2, 3, 4 stages back to service is that, yeah, there is that familiarity. And you've only got probably 20 miles to 25 miles max to familiarise yourself with. So it's not that bad. You know, you've got, when you've got 40, 50, 60 mile a kilometre to remember, it's a bit different. So the recce is a big help there. But, you know, BTRDA events are on generally similar territory every year. It just, you're driving in an area that you're comfortable in. But for me, the challenge has been, well, I used to brake here in an Evo, but now I can brake 60 metres later in an R5. And that is the challenge now. It's understanding what the improvement is and the capability is in the R5 versus what I've been going through those forests for the last 13 years. So the knowledge is great from a familiarity point of view, but how much it actually helps drive the R5 because it's so different, I'm not sure. That's just got to be where the comfort and the trust in the car comes in. So it is a bit of a juggling act.
So what I find interesting as well is that, of course, we should probably make this a little bit clear, and I'm not just kind of bigging Matt up a little bit here. In the BTRDA, you can bring pretty much what you like. So, you know, the R5 fits into Sterling's B14, it fits into, but of course, you have got World Rally cars there, you know, Focus, Fiestas and things like that. That's what you're going toe-to-toe with. When you went into BTRDA this year, was it in your head that, you know, it's achievable to beat world cars, or was it purely seat time? Was that the job of BTRDA for you this year?
Yeah, the job of BTRDA was just purely to get in the car as often as possible, because, as we said, there was nothing like driving that car. You can't jump into any sort of road car, track car, or any other rally car, really, and get that same feeling, because they just move about and stop so well, handle so well, ride the bumps so well. You can't replicate that without being in it. So the remit is just seat time, you know, get some familiarity and confidence in the car, and every time you get back in it, you don't drop back that far from where you left it. So, you know, keep topping up the experience. I mean, the planes at the weekend was a different experience altogether. We had a little issue on the first stage, slapped the bank and had a resultant wheel failure, if you like. Got through there, 30 seconds down straight away, and that's a position I've not been in before. But having the pace there to kind of claw back the time was a different thing to manage again. So that was, yeah, the reason we were there was a bit of a negative, but what we actually learnt as a result was a huge positive from a mental point of view and a work ethic point of view, that we, you know, we still wanted to perform, we wanted to win the rally, and we just threw everything that we could at it to, you know, in terms of effort and input from myself and Darren, we worked really well together. You know, we were front to back in tyres just to make sure we got that, you know, that extra little bit of performance, whether it's 1-2%, it all makes a difference. And you know, we worked really hard to get that time back, and you know, it was a massive positive to have won the rally in that way, rather than, you know, the completely different way in which we won Severn Valley, winning all seven stages. It's a different mindset, but the result, the end result's been the same, but it's a massive amount of experience and you know, things we've learned to take forward.
Can I just point out, by the way, wheel failure is a great description of the fact that I seen your car finish the stage on three wheels. That is without doubt a proper drive. Yeah, wheel failure. Hang on a minute. Wheel failure. I'm sorry, mate. I've got to pick you up on this one.
I am accepting full responsibility for
all right, however. Good lad. Wheel failure is a whopper.
It should have been driver failure then, shouldn't it?
Good man. So what happens now, Matt? How do you know? Obviously, there's BTRDA events next month, 9th of June. Of course, Carlisle stages. In fact, we'll be there. I'm actually going to do that one. But yeah, how are you keeping sharp now? Obviously, you've got your business, and yeah, I know. For instance, you're down the workshop now, and we should point this out, by the way, that we've mentioned Swift quite a few times, and Pete, who's behind it, perhaps you should tell the tale a little bit better than what I, but he's got an R2 car, and I think this is an amazing thing that he's done with young drivers. Just tell our listeners a little bit about what Pete's done.
Yeah, well, I ended up buying an R2 car end of last year that an Icelandic driver's come over to do BLC in, as a means to developing his career. So we got to the BLC Awards, and we were just sitting on the table, and we decided that we'd put a young driver in it for Grisdale stages, just to see how we got on, and somebody that needed a little bit of support but had shown good, you know, initiative with their own rallying to that point. And so Tommy Meadows went in there, you know, had a great day, got some really useful things out of the event, and so subsequently Pete bought another car, and that was bought over from Ireland before Christmas. You know, we did a load of prep work on it, and we've got that out now, and it is purely just to get drivers of our choosing who have shown some promise, some good input, some effort, and off their own bat, into a car that they can use as a bit of a lever in their own career, and just to see how people get on, really, as a leg up, putting them in at the deep end. You know, it's not an arrive and drive package. They have to come, you know, help and show a bit of support. There's not really a test program with it. It's just getting that, see how you get on. And it's a bit of a test of their character and their ability to adapt to new situations, and you see who we find of it at the end of it. And we've got a few people lined up throughout the rest of the year to have a go in the car, and it keeps me very busy at work as well.
So how are the drivers chosen?
Literally just me and Pete have a conversation. We have two or three conversations a day, so inevitably we're already talking about, you know, other options for other events this year. And it's literally just on merit of who we think. There is no application process or anything like that, and some people aren't in the position to take us up on the offer, because it's not an arrive and drive. There has to be, you know, the driver has to insure the car and things like that, and provide a few little bits and pieces. But so it's never... Yeah, like it's never been with me and Pete. It's never been, here's everything on a plate, go and do it. I've always had to, and still do have to, you know, put a chunk that is you know, 110% of what I've got available to go at it. It's just the level of that competition's gone up over the years, and I'm still putting, you know, everything that I've got into it, and more from other areas that I can find to support it. But and that's what we're trying to find in some other drivers as well, just people that can, you know, with an opportunity that's beneficial to them, find a little bit extra to go and do it. And you know, it's not a free ride by any means, but it's a great opportunity for people to have a go at a level above what they're currently competing at.
Absolutely. What a great initiative, by the way. What a great initiative. So you've got 4 weeks off now. There, mate, nothing to do, just feet up in the workshop, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Let all the minions run around and do it all for me. Yeah. I wish. So as I sit here now, there's two cars outside that obviously need prepping for a couple of weeks' time. And other bits and pieces going on in between. But you know, it's back to work. We're doing some tuition. There's some customers on the Scottish at the weekend, so we're going up there Friday. Yeah, it's busy, lots of things going on.
Good man. Well, listen, mate, I appreciate you joining us, albeit a second bite of the cherry to get you on, but it was good to get you on. We will get you on a little bit further into the year. If you keep winning, it makes life so much easier. No pressure at all. No, listen, Matt, it's been great. I've watched it from afar, and obviously we've known each other for a long time, so it's actually just quite nice to see you get on, to be honest with you. So well done, you, mate. And we'll catch up with you again soon. Folks, you know where to find us, Absolute_Rally on Twitter, facebook.com/AbsoluteRally, all the old episodes on absoluterally.co.uk. We'll be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole next week.